Welcome to the Father's State. I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. You can support the Father's State right there on the YouTube channel by becoming a member or going to locals.com and support our work. Amazing show today. I already know it before it even happens. I have with me, oh, don't forget Punchy's Coffee. I have my own coffee now. That's amazing. I'm a black man with coffee. I'm not even Mexican. I have my own coffee, Punchy's Coffee. Go to jesseleepeterson.shop, and that's for that helps support our work as well. I appreciate it. I have with me Rudy Rockman. He is a Zionist, former IDF soldier, and a Jewish-Israeli rights activist. Thanks for being here, Rudy.
Thank you for having me, Jesse.
Amazing. So I want to know a few things first. So you are a Zionist, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And so what is a Zionist?
I think it's very important we define the terms that we use because a lot of people have different definitions or wrong definitions. And at the end of the day, the words that we use, it's not about the sound that we make. It's about what they mean.
Right.
And so Zionism comes from the word Zion, which means Jerusalem. And so someone who is a Zionist believes in the concept of Zionism, which is the right for the Jewish people to self-determine on their ancestral homeland. The Jews are an ancient people who come from the land of Israel / Judea. That's where we're indigenous to. That's where our civilization was founded. We were displaced by the Roman Empire and different empires who came. And the idea of us having the right to come back home is the idea of Zionism. And anyone who believes in that right for the Jews to return is a Zionist.
And so is a Zionist Jew, is that a religion or culture?
The Zionist aspect is the ideology that you agree that the Jews should have a right to return back home. So a non-Jew yourself, if you believe the Jews should have a right to self-determine on their ancestral homeland, you yourself would be a Zionist. Now there's right-wing Zionist, left-wing Zionist, Christian Zionist, Jewish Zionist. So there's all kinds of different views when it comes to this idea. But the core idea is that the Jews should be able to come back. And it has nothing to do with another people who live there or conflicts with them. It's purely the idea that Jews have the right to come back.
Oh, so it's not a religion either. It's just that...
No.
Jews should come back to their land.
Right, when it comes to Zionism. Now, Judaism, a lot of people, in my opinion, misdefine it as religion.
Right.
And the reason I say they misdefine it is because the word religion is defined as a belief system in a God, deity, book, or a prophet. So if one doesn't believe in the God, deity, book, or prophet of said religion, by the very definition, they're not a part of it, which is why a Christian that rejects Jesus is no longer a Christian. A Muslim that rejects Muhammad or the Quran is no longer a Muslim. A Buddhist that rejects the philosophies of Buddha is no longer a Buddhist, right? You have to believe in this ideology to be a part of that religion. Now, a Jew that doesn't believe in Torah, which is our book, or doesn't believe in the law of Moses or in God, they're still a Jew. So it's not a wandering ideology that one is a part of it if in the moment they believe in it or not. It is a portable suitcase that when we were kicked out of our ancient civilization, in order to preserve who we were, we packed in our ancestry, our culture, our spirituality, our language, our laws, our customs, our values, our morals, everything inside. And we labeled this suitcase Judaism, and we passed it down generation to generation with the aspiration of one year we'll come back home to Jerusalem and revive that civilization. So I don't look at Judaism as a religion. I look at it as a portable version of an ancient civilization.
And that's how all the Zionists see it? They see it the same way?
I think a lot of Jews use the term religion, but they mean different things than the way the world uses the word religion. The way I described Judaism, I would say the majority of Jews would agree with my definition, but they would still use the word religion because they don't quite understand that the way the world is using it is differently than how we're misusing it.
What a mess. So are you a religious person?
Yes, I definitely am religious with what I believe in.
You believe in Jesus?
No, I believe Jesus was a person. I believe in God, but I don't believe that Jesus is God nor the Messiah.
So you don't believe that, do all Zionists believe this about Jesus, that Jesus is not the Son of God?
So Zionists are people who believe that Jews should be able to return, like yourself.
Right.
But people who are Jewish, the vast majority of Jews do not believe that Jesus is the Son of God, the Messiah, version of God. There are some Jews who do believe that,
right.
But they're a minority.
Yeah. Why don't you believe, you personally, why don't you believe that Jesus is the Son of God?
Right. So to believe something, you have to have evidence or you have to have enough proof for your opinion to change and to accept that. Like I could ask you, why don't you believe Muhammad is a prophet? In order for you to accept that, someone would have to provide you with the relevant information for you to come to that conclusion. And from a Jewish perspective, we do not see this person, Jesus, who clearly was an influential revolutionary of his time,
yeah.
Right? Clearly influenced a lot of people around the world and created waves that till this day we can see are happening.
Yeah.
So he was clearly a historical figure, but we don't see him as a Messiah, as a Mashiach. There are many things that have to happen in our view that for a person to be Mashiach. World peace, the tribes of Israel have to be reunited, all wars have to cease, the dead have to come back alive. So there's a lot of things that have to happen.
And yet, Jesus did all that. He died, and he came back, and then he rose to the Father.
Well, that's your opinion.
But you don't believe that?
No,
happened.
I don't believe that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you still waited for the Messiah?
Correct.
But he has come and gone and returned.
In your opinion?
Yeah, he lived within us.
In your opinion.
But you don't believe that.
No, I don't believe that. I also think that that Mashiach, Messiah, is not just a person, but a time period. A time period where humanity will have a correction and we will be able to have a sort of human evolution of bringing spirituality and physicality together. A recalibration of the human experience. Right now, we're the most conscious species, right? If you compare us to other animals, and we're very conscious. And yet, we're the most destructive species.
That's because most people, that include Christians and Jews and Allahu Abba people, and everyone, they don't believe in Jesus. They believe about him, but they don't believe in him. And as a result of not believing in him, they are animals. They act like animals. They have no love. They hate one another. They try to hurt one another because they are in the fallen state. Mm-hmm. They're in the animal nature.
Well, we can see that there have been throughout history people who do believe in Jesus who do act also animalistic.
No.
There are.
They believe about him. Those who act that way, they believe about him. They do
and
not
so
believe.
Do you think
they believe it about Jesus is not knowing Jesus.
Right. And so do you think anyone who doesn't believe in Jesus is acting animalistic? Or could there be some people who don't believe in Jesus and don't act animalistic?
All people who have not returned to the Father is in an animal state.
Right.
So
the way I see that is, you know, this is kind of the differences between Judaism and Christianity. And I think what your show does so well is that you bring different opinions and they're able to engage respectfully.
Right.
Where today we're living in a time where just because you have different of opinions, you're attacking one another.
So they automatically attack
each other. So I think it's very healthy to be able to differ, but to differ respectfully.
Absolutely.
So if you look at Christianity, you look at a person who's sinning. And all they need to do in order to go away from that sin or to be repented from that sin is accept Jesus. And for Judaism, we don't say you need to accept a person and then you're forgiven, but you need to work on yourself. You need to repent from within and say, what did I do wrong? How do I fix it? How do I change my behavior? So I think the fundamental differences within Christianity and Judaism is Christianity saying you could be a horrible person as long as you accept Jesus, you're going to heaven. You could be a great person, you didn't accept Jesus, you're not going to heaven. For Judaism, you're going... Heaven is not really a place. It's more a reality that we need to bring to this world. But your repentance is based on your self-work. And as long as we're breathing and living here, we have the opportunity to be able to elevate ourselves and the world around us.
Amazing. But I got so much more I want to ask you. But I do want you to know that God nor Jesus has anything to do with religion at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they have this dumb idea that all you have to do is accept Jesus and you're going to be saved and go to heaven. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the Christian people are horrible people, because they don't know what it means to accept Jesus. That's why they're still evil, nasty, revengeful, jealous. Nothing has changed because they have not accepted. Jesus doesn't have anything to do with Christianity at all.
Mm-hmm. So you believe in self-accountability and working to make ones better.
You got to work on yourself.
That's great. That's amazing.
Amazing. But that's what Jesus said, and that's what God meant and said too.
Mm-hmm.
It's this kingdom of heaven. It's inside of us. It's not with expressing some dumb words.
Right.
And that's what they do. But anyway, let me ask. Do you have dual citizenship? Are you here in America?
I have three citizenships.
Do you have three?
Yeah.
Like where?
France, Israel, and America.
So you have all those citizenships?
Yeah, but for me, those are pieces of paper.
Meaning what?
Meaning that if you look at Jewish history, Jews have lived in many different places, and we've been persecuted in many of those places. You had Jews that were living in Germany during the Holocaust that had German citizenships, and yet that piece of paper didn't mean anything as they were being taken into war camps and death camps. So for me, it's just a piece of paper that gives you a status of equality within a society, but I'm very honest that I'm not American. I'm not French, I'm Israeli. I don't vote in foreign elections because it's not up to me to dictate to another country what leader they should have. If I am present, I live in Israel, but if I do come and visit in a different place, I have to respect the law. I have to be able to elevate the society around me.
Yeah.
And I always make sure that I'm honest that I'm an Israelite. I'm not an American, I'm not a French, even though I have a piece of paper.
So you put, you're Israel first person?
Only.
Israel only?
Yeah, well, not in the sense of America only where you don't want to have relations with anyone else, but I'm only an Israelite.
Right.
I'm not an American. I'm not a French person. I'm not anything else but a member of the nation of Israel.
And you are part of the IDF soldier, right?
Correct. Every 18-year-old has to join the army.
I know. That's amazing. I like that.
Yeah.
And so what was it like being... How old were you when you went to the army?
So I actually joined a bit earlier. I joined at 17.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was in 2011. I joined right out of high school. I served my time as a sniper in the paratroopers. And since then, I've been on reserves. So even over the past 2 years since October 7th, I've been in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Syria, fighting the wars of Israel as a reservist already over 10 years after the army.
Wow. You're not going to ever quit?
Usually you serve until you're about 40 years old. Unless you have something that comes up, like an injury or some other situation that happens in your life. But for me, I look at it as an honor that we have to defend our country, to defend our people, to make sure that there's life over death.
Amazing, man. So you're a Jewish-Israeli rights activist. What does that mean?
There's a lot of movements that seek to attack the Jewish people, both physically and ideologically. After my time in the army, I started university in the U.S. I started at UCLA and then I transferred to Columbia University. Mm. And in those spaces, people are attacking Israel philosophically, ideologically, you know, trying to boycott it, attacking it economically. And so it's part of my job, not just to defend Israel and the Jewish people physically when it's in battle, but also mentally, spiritually, ideologically, in these different spaces. And so I debate people, I go on the news, I try to create content that shifts people's perception of who the Jewish people is. So they're both spiritual wars, but there's a physical war and there's an ideological war. And I'm in both of them.
That's amazing. I grew up in Alabama on a plantation. And when I was growing up, we were taught to love Israel and that if it wasn't for Judaism, there would be no Christianity. So I've always seen Israel and Christians as being one, brothers in God, right? And I grew up, just couldn't wait to go to Israel because I read the Bible and I read everything in the Bible is in Israel or, you know, around and about. Mm-hmm. And so I got the chance to go and I realized that, as I told you earlier, if I was God and you want to go to heaven, you will have to visit Israel first. You come up to the pearly gate, I would tell Noah, one of those guys, to go answer the gate and ask them first, did you go to Israel? And they like say no, you have to go back to earth or back to hell or find your way somewhere. You can't get into heaven. But I can't imagine that. But what I didn't know and I didn't hear growing up, I didn't know that people hated Israel. Mm-hmm. I did not know. That seemed like it's something new. Because when I was growing up, and for some reason, I didn't think of the Jewish people, because I thought all people were the same anyway. But I love Israel because of what I read about it, and I knew the relationship we had. And so from what I knew, all Christians and all people love Israel. I was surprised to find out that they hate it. What causes people to hate Israel?
That's a great question.
It's so amazing.
Yeah.
What caused... Oh, one other question. When I first heard people put down Israel, I first heard it from Jesse Jackson, those kind of guys, Louis Farrakhan and others. Prior to that, I never heard it before. And I only heard that once I moved to L.A. What caused people to hate Israel? It doesn't make sense to me.
Right. So I'll make it make sense to you.
Okay.
And I think your experience, if you look at the Black South, since they were brought into the Americas, they've had a very good relationship with the idea of Israel, right?
Yeah.
Israel existed post that experience, but even the idea of Israel, they read it in the Bible, they have their songs, they identify with the stories of slavery, they identify with the stories of King David. So the Black American experience overall always had a very positive relationship with Israel until the Farrakhans and the later movements that came much after. But historically, there's always been anti-Semitism. I mean, you can look at the Inquisition in Spain and the Holocausts that happened.
How about America?
Before America got involved with World War II, there was a huge Nazi movement that was happening in America. And you had signs that said, no black people, no Jews, right? We were right next to each other in terms of segregation and pushing people away. And that's why there was a lot of alliances that existed between black people and Jews during the Civil Rights Movement. But your fundamental question is, I think, one of the most important questions on this topic is why?
Yeah.
Because we talk about what's going on. Okay, we get it, but why is it happening? If we don't understand why, we're not going to be able to play a role be able to fix it, right? And so if you look at, I'm going to first break down the reality for maybe some of your viewers that don't understand. If you look at the far left, they say that the Jews are the right. You look at the far right, they say the Jews are the left. You look at the black supremacists like the Farrakhans, the Jews are enemy number one.
Yeah.
You look at the white supremacists, the KKK members and neo-Nazis, Jews are enemy number one. You look at the ultra-religious people, Jews are enemy number one. Ultra-secular people, the feminists, Jews are enemies. Every single side that you go that's on an extreme, they all agree on one thing only, that the Jews are the problem. How they're the problem, they'll disagree on how.
Right.
But that they are the problem, they're all on the same page, which is amazing, right? It's fascinating.
That is amazing.
It's pretty crazy. And now,
I've never asked anyone this question, so I'm interested in it.
So the answers I got growing up when I was asking my community, why are we constantly hated? You know, all of my grandparents were born in different countries. All of them were persecuted because they were Jews. All of their families were exterminated because they were Jews. And so I asked myself, why historically do we constantly be persecuted by wherever we're having an experience? And we're always blamed for all problems, right?
Yeah.
The economy has to be the Jews. The weather has to be the Jews. The government has to be the Jews. Charlie Kirk died, must be Israel, right? Literally anything that happens, like someone is finding a way to flip it and to reverse it and blame it on Jews. And you know enough Jews to know that we're not behind all of these things. I mean, there are some individual bad Jews who are not so good, like you have any population.
Anywhere,
if you look on average, the output that the Jewish people have is usually positive. So why are you assuming all the Jews are behind these things? And so the three excuses I would often hear is, well, people are jealous of us because we tend to be successful. And I kind of reject that because there were times in Europe where we weren't successful, we were living in poverty, and they were still blaming us for all problems and hating on us.
Yeah.
There are countries like Singapore that's a new country and ultra successful. No one's boycotting Singapore. If you look at the three minority groups who are recent immigrants in America that have the most success, it's Nigerians, Koreans, and Indians. And I don't see any boycotts and protests and campus movements against these communities. And you look into New York City, right, where you have a large percentage of the population that's Jewish, 13%, right? One of the largest Jewish communities in the world is in New York, but we are 13%, 1/3 of the population in New York City as Jews. If you look at the total hate crimes, you look at hate crimes against black people, women, whatever group it is, the total hate crimes against the Jewish people is over 60% of that total. So how are we 13% and yet over 60% of hate crimes are targeted against Jews? It cannot be success. The next argument used is that we other ourselves. We have our own Jewish day schools and cemeteries and hospitals. And so because we have like this separation, then people hate us. But look at the Amish. The Amish separate themselves. No one's going and blaming the Amish for running the economy. The Muslims separate themselves. The Indians separate themselves. The Armenians separate themselves. No one's going to those communities and blaming them for all world problems because they have a separation. The last excuse often given that I heard growing up is there's this dual loyalty clause, which I think you were alluding to when you asked me, like, are you American or not? And I think we need to be very honest as Jews.
Absolutely.
You know, Judaism is not a religion. It's a civilization from Judea / Israel / the Hebrews. And I'm honest. I'm not against America, but I'm not American. I'm an Israelite. I'm a visitor here. This is not my ancestral homeland. My homeland is in Israel, which is where I live. Now, people say that there's this dual loyalty because Jews are first allied with or loyal to the greater Jewish collective or to Israel, then people are going to think that they're traitors. But I grew up a large percentage of my early childhood life in Miami. And in Miami, everyone's from somewhere else. Argentina, Venezuela, Colombia, Haiti, Jamaica, Cuba, like everyone's from somewhere else.
So, why do they hate the Jews then? What is it that made them hate the Jews?
The question is not what
why
did
do
we do that caused the world to hate us. The question is what we didn't do. Now, in order to understand what we didn't do, we need to remember what we're supposed to do as a collective. The mission statement of the Jewish people is to do tikkun olam, to heal the world, and to be or lagoim, a light to the nations. This is what it says in the Torah.
Right.
Now, what does it mean to heal the world? Wherever there's hatred, jealousy, materialism, famine, idolatry, we as a nation chose the responsibility to elevate this world. Wherever there's darkness, all kinds of problems, we're supposed to turn on the light for people to see, to activate and achieve
right.
their greatest potential. So if the world is a body, and every nation has a function, there's a reason that we're all created. God created all of us for a reason. And every nation has a function within the human body. The only thing in the human body that fulfills the healing of the world, healing the body, and empowering the other nations, so empowering the rest of the organs, the only thing that does that is the immune system. Now, when the immune system does not work, the body becomes sick. It's not the immune system that created the diseases, but it was the immune system's responsibility to correct it.
Right.
It's not the Jewish people that created the world's problems, but it's the Jewish people's responsibility to prevent or to correct them. And anti-Semitism, fundamentally, is a rejection and reaction of all these extreme groups who are suffering, who are looking to the Jews and blaming us for creating those problems. Now, they're right and they're wrong. We didn't create those problems, but the reason they're experiencing us as being the source of those problems is because we're supposed to be the source of the solution. And until the Jewish people do their job and actually elevate this world and do the job that we chose that we have the ability to do, we will continuously be rejected and blamed for all problems, even though we didn't create them.
But that's never going to happen.
It will.
Oh, I'm about to have you come in. I want you to hear this there. That's my producer for the radio show. He black.
I can see.
So people hate the Jews because the Jews are not helping to heal the lands.
Yeah.
They're not healing.
They don't hate us because they ain't us. They hate us because we ain't us.
Because you hate?
Because we ain't us.
Oh, you're
we
not.
We aren't who we're supposed
but
to be.
But that's never going to happen.
It will.
It will?
Yeah.
Meaning what?
Meaning it's gonna have to happen. God positioned it in a way that no matter what, it ends up happening. There's plan A and there's plan B. Plan B is World War III and from the ashes something will happen. Or plan A is we get it together. Now, in my opinion, the way that we can activate it and get it together is by bringing back all the tribes of Israel. Right now, if you look at the Jewish people around the world, we're about 16 million, 1-6, right? That's the descendants of 2.5 out of 12 tribes. The tribe of Judah, Benjamin, and half of Levi. 9.5 of the tribes of Israel are missing. And so how do you have a car move forward if the majority of the pieces in the car aren't even in the car? It might look like a car from the outside. You have the body, but the majority of the pieces inside aren't there for it to be able to move. So my opinion, in order for us to activate our potential and to be able to start doing our job, we have to first bring back the rest of the tribes of Israel back home.
That's not going to happen.
It is. And I'm working on it.
But let me ask. There are Jews... Well, let me ask this first. Someone asked me to ask you this. Should we have a regime change in Iran?
Yes.
What do you you say yes?
Of course.
And why do you say yes?
Well, first of all, it's a dictatorship that doesn't represent the people. And it's also an evil regime that is oppressing its people and causing havoc around the world, investing in terror. And the Iranian people, the Persians, are very old people who've had great relations with Israel historically. And even in the more recent years, in the past 100 years, there were great relations between Iran and Israel before the Ayatollahs took power. And so we need to free Iran from that regime to give the power back to their people and to allow them to achieve their greatest potential of doing good in this world, not bad.
Well, if they were to change regime, they're going to be coming here. I don't want them here. We have enough foreigners here already and just nothing but problems.
Mm-hmm.
If they change regime, would they go to Israel?
Change regimes, they should stay in their homeland.
They shouldn't come here.
Well, I'm not American to say what should happen here. I think...
Should they go to Israel?
No. In Israel, we have Jews. This is the home of the Jewish people.
But don't let these foreigners go to Israel.
And also, we have other minorities who live there, the Druze, the Palestinians, others who have access and have a right to that land as well. But when it comes to the Persians, I think they should have self-determination in their homeland. Individually, if a person wants to travel or to learn or to get work elsewhere,
right.
they should be able to do so. But overall, we should free that land for the Persian people to have their power back in their hands.
But not let the people go to Israel or America, right? Make them stay at home and fix up their own land and take care of themselves.
And I think they want that. I don't think we're dealing with a population
who
wants to leave.
So we won't have a bunch of refugees coming, right?
No, I don't think so. I think you can empower the people.
Okay.
I mean, ideally, we don't want anybody to be a refugee, right? We
right.
want people to
stay home.
stay home, or if you go somewhere else, not to live in this refugee mindset, right? To grow, to acclimate into a society, to be productive into a society. So I think the idea of a bad regime leaving and a better regime or a better form of government that represents its people taking power is a form of self-empowerment for the community, whether they live there or out.
You accept that? You like that answer? As long as they don't come here or Israel. Okay.
But Persian people are great people, you know. I mean, you're living on a street with a lot of Persian Jews that live on Pico.
I was surprised to see different color Jews. I always saw white Jews.
Right.
And I'd never seen different color Jews until I moved here.
Right. I would actually say that there's no such thing as a white Jew.
But they look white.
Right. They look white. Doesn't mean they're white. Like, you can have an albino African that looks white. Doesn't mean he's white. You can have a pale Asian.
That's right.
That doesn't mean he's white. So it's more than skin color.
Should America because there's a lot of talk now about America supporting Israel, and people are saying that the Jews control our government, mm-hmm. and that they, even though I don't know if it's true or not, but Great White Hope, you know what the Great White Hope is, right?
I know what you refer to as the Great White Hope.
That's right. Some people call him amazing. What matter or man is this?
Yeah.
The wind and the sea obeys him.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call him king, and they hold rallies around the world for the king. And some people call him daddy, but I call him the Great White Hope. And some people believe that Israel is controlling him, the Great White Hope, and as a result, our government is giving Israel too much money.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that?
So people are saying the Jews control anything and everything, and they've been saying this for generations. So
how about the Great White Hope? Do you believe?
I don't think that the Jews in Israel are controlling Donald Trump, but I am against the U.S. foreign aid to Israel. And I'll explain why. Because
okay.
It's not cash that America is giving to Israel. It's not worth sending money and then Israel can do whatever they want. It's credit to be used only to buy weapons from U.S. companies, so that money actually recirculates into the U.S. economy, into weapon companies. But then also there's a contract that says if America gives this to Israel, Israel now cannot produce many of its own weapons, cannot sell weapons to any other country but America unless it's authorized, cannot buy weapons from any other countries unless authorized by America, and it makes us controlled by the U.S. Now, I'm for collaboration, support, relations, but I'm against toxic relations. And this wasn't created by Trump. This has existed for a very long time in the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. But I want Israel to be fully independent.
Right.
And if we have a relationship with one another, it's a relation of respect and of mutual benefit, not where one controls the other. So in my opinion, America is in a position to control Israel, not the other way around. Trump has always been very pro-Israel. I mean, even his father was pro-Israel.
Yeah.
His daughter has converted to Judaism, his Jewish granddaughters.
Everybody I know, especially older people,
they
support Israel.
Right, so supporting Israel is great, but I don't want to see a toxic relationship on any side. And I would actually agree that the U.S. foreign aid relationship with Israel is a toxic relationship, but one that actually favors America. Now, if Trump is in power and likes Israel, then he's not going to use it against Israel.
Right.
But what about the next president? If the next president is not for Israel, like we've seen Obama and Biden not being so pro-Israel, then all of a sudden we're going to see a shift where Israel is going to be controlled by a country who is a superpower and it has an ability to dominate it and push it into a corner that we don't want to see. So Israel should be completely independent of U.S. foreign aid.
Oh, good. Right on. Do all the Jews feel this way?
No, they say one Jew, two Jews, three opinions. So you'll have many different opinions that exist amongst the Jewish people.
So what do you say to the whites and then some other racist people, not racist, but race of people who are upset because they think that Israel controlled Donald Trump and our government and that we're just dumping money over there, we're taking care of them? How do you make them feel better? You see the reality of that.
Right, so first of all,
I think you just explained
it. It's factually incorrect that the U.S. is giving money. It's giving credit so that it could use it to buy weapons from U.S. companies. The money's going directly to the U.S. companies, not to Israel. And it benefits America to do that because now we're dependent on America and then they can tell us what to do because they control our military and our supplies into our military because we're constantly at war, so we need those supplies. So that actually advantages America, not Israel. And I'm for that relationship to change and to be one that's more beneficial and healthier for both.
Right on. I noticed that in America, and maybe around the world, but in America, not all blacks, but most of the blacks hate the whites, and they blame the white people for their failure in life. And they blame it on slavery, which is not true, or Jim Crow and all that mess, which is something new that's been going on for the last 70 years or so. And I noticed that they cannot have a life because they're so mad at white people about nothing. They can't function because when you have anger, you can't function. But when I went to Israel, I noticed that the Palestinian, the Allahu Akbar people, they feel the same way about the Jews. I remember going to the city of David. Well, we didn't go in there, but we could look over there. And the city of David was like a beautiful area, beautiful home we used to be. All really nice, and they gave it, I guess, to the Palestinian. And instead of the Palestinian cleaning it up and adding to it and making it beautiful, they are jealous of the Jews. They still, and the Jews' area is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they are jealous of the Jews, and they are blaming the Jews that they don't have a life in the same way the blacks blame the whites. Why do somebody always blame somebody else for their lack of?
I think you can find many similarities when you compare two different peoples, but I think we should separate them for a second, what's happening in America between black-white relations and what's happening between Palestinians and Israelis. And I think, you know, we can go back to the Bible, and the Bible has all the archetype answers of why these things are happening.
Right.
The relationship, if we look at the Palestinians and the Arab and Muslim world with the Jews and Israel, is the same relationship that Isaac has with his brother Ishmael. Ishmael is the father of the Muslims, and Isaac is the father of the Jews, both children of Abraham. And the relationship between Ishmael and Isaac is one where Ishmael is very jealous of Isaac. Isaac's the younger brother, and he all of a sudden is the chosen one, is the one that's supposed to carry the line. And Ishmael has a lot of jealousy. Eventually, he gets kicked out. There's a lot of drama that happened between both. But at some point, Ishmael does tshuva, which means he repents, he corrects himself, and eventually they reunite. Now, right now, we're living in the pre-tshuva Ishmael, meaning before the repentance of Ishmael, Ishmael is acting wild, chopping off heads, acting in a way, conquering people. And we can kind of see that happening with radical Islam. That doesn't represent all of Islam, not all Arabs, not all Muslims, not all Palestinians. Right. But we do see this expression of this radicalism that clearly is a problem that even many Muslims reject and are against. And that is something that has to be worked on and changed. But eventually, the Palestinians and Israelis will be able to reunite.
You really think that's going to happen?
Well, do you believe in a world where there will be a Messiah reality where there'll be peace on earth? Right?
I believe that.
If that will exist, then of course, then it must be that we correct all the problems.
Well, we're never going to have peace on earth. Mm-hmm. But what we will have is those who have returned to the Father, they will have peace right here on earth in spite of the hell that's going on around them through other people, because hell lives in the individual, and the individual is the one that brings hell out into the earth against others and everything. So I believe that, I know that there will never be like peace on earth for everybody, but it will be, and they can have it right now if they wanted it, but you can have perfect peace right here on earth right now in spite of the hell that, because hell lives in human beings, mm-hmm. and they act it out. And so if you overcome hell yourself, you can have perfect peace right here on earth right now. You don't have to wait, because as Christ said, it was finished, it was done. And that the kingdom of heaven is inside of us. And if you live from that kingdom, you can have peace right now. And it's so true, I can holler. There are no words to explain. But you can have peace already.
All right, so we have to elevate the world. And you know a lot of people before
the
creation.
But most people don't want it.
Well, let's show them why they do want it.
Most people love their thrills. They love their hell. They love their misery.
Well,
and they don't want to give it up.
Let's say before the creation of Israel, right? There were a lot of people who told the idea that we should have a right to a land, that was crazy. They're like, there's no way you're going to leave from being killed in the Holocaust and come back into this forsaken land that's not developed, that has a lot of swamps and desert and has enemy populations all around that want to kill. Like, how is that going to happen? And yet, you went to Israel. Right. And you saw how amazing of a place it is.
It was amazing.
Amazing, right?
So, as a matter of fact, I felt safer in Israel than I did and do in America.
Right.
Whereas I heard before we went over there, oh, be careful. Mm. They have the war, they're going to get this. But when I went, I felt safe. I had no fear. I had no worry. I had no concerns.
Right. So my point is that this reality that now exists, that is normal to us because we have access to it, was a crazy idea in the previous generation. In the same way, I'm talking to you about a reality where there will be peace on earth, where there will be a reunification between the Israelis and Palestinians, between Islam and Judaism, where we elevate humanity back to where it's supposed to be. Just because we're not there yet doesn't mean we can't get there. And we definitely can't get there if we don't believe we can get there. That's where it starts.
Amazing. So one other quick question about that, and then I have some other questions for you. So you don't believe in Jesus. The Zionists don't believe in Jesus, but they believe in God? Believe in God?
Yeah, most Jews don't believe in Jesus. We do believe that he was a person, that he was around. We do believe he was an influential figure at his time, a revolutionary person. But we don't believe that he was a God or the Son of God or the Messiah. We do believe in God, though.
But how can you believe in God if you don't believe that God sent the Son to tell you how to return to him and made it possible so that we can return to him? Now, Jesus didn't want people to believe in him either. He didn't want them to worship him. He didn't want them to call him king. He tried to make it clear to them that he was no different than them. They just wasn't aware that they were no different than Jesus because they were lost in their in their imagination. And so Jesus never wanted to be worshipped, but he came and brought us the message that you can return to the Father now. He sent me, the thing is done, we paid the price so you can come back to the Father. But they worshiped Jesus. They made him a king. They called him everything but a son of God. Mm-hmm. But how can you believe in God without knowing that, without understanding the message that was sent to you by God?
So first of all, it says in many places in the Torah that God is not a man. And you had
He lived in a body, but
A lot of Christians do believe that
but
Jesus
they're dumb.
Is God, right? Okay. Well,
we can say dumb, right?
97% of Christians have a different view to you.
99.9% of the Christians are dumb as a doorknob.
Okay. That's...
You agree?
The majority of humanity has yet to elevate. Let's put it that way. To answer your question, you're telling me, how could you believe in God if you don't believe in the Son of God, which is Jesus? Well, if another person came to
me... But not believe in him, but believe the message that he brought.
Right, you're assuming that that message is true. And I'll go by that argument for a second.
Right.
Let's say there was another person that came to me and said, there's this woman named Woman X, and this Woman X is the daughter of God. And then she would ask you, how do you believe that there's the Son of God and his message if you don't believe in the daughter of God and his message? So we can separate those two things. I respect your right to believe in your version of what you understand.
But you shouldn't believe in a daughter.
No.
I gave
an example of something we would both disagree with.
Right.
To show you that if someone has this belief, it doesn't mean then all of a sudden that yours is illegitimate just because there's difference.
Absolutely.
So the same way I have a different view of God, I see God as oneness that exists and that he did not have a son and that Messiah has yet to come. My belief is not invalidated because you have a different belief in a version of what I believe.
But isn't that because the rabbis in those days were jealous of God, of Jesus, because he was reminding the people that the rabbis were liars and hypocrites, and they were cleaning the glass on the outside by wearing these fancy robes and hats and things, where on the inside they were not cleaning that at all. And so they were deceiving the people in order to control the people by pretending that they were talking about God or they knew God. Then Jesus, so isn't that because of the rabbis?
No. So if we look at the time of the Roman Empire, which you're talking about 2,000 years ago when Jesus was around, you had the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Zealots. You have three different communities of Jews.
Right.
Mainstream Orthodox rabbinical Judaism today comes from the Pharisees. And so to describe quickly the differences, the Sadducees believed that they should not only be under the Romans that were our occupiers at the time, but that they should try to become like the Romans. They also rejected the oral Torah and kept only the written Torah. The Pharisees knew that they were Jews, wanted had to keep both the oral and written Torah, but were okay with living under the Romans. And you had the zealots that were a little bit more extreme. That's why you had this word zealous. That means a little bit more extreme, more activated, which not only believed they should remain Jewish with the oral and written Torah, but also that the Romans should not control their land. So there are valid critiques you can have of each community, right, both the leaders and the individuals, but I don't think it's because Jesus rejected particularly or criticized the rabbis that he was rejected. I think Jesus never said that he was God. When he said he was the Son of God,
he never said he was
when
God.
He said he was the Son of God, he said we're all the children of God, right? So in that way, it's true. We're all creations of God. We all come from Adam, right? Adam is literally the creation of God. Me and you are brothers, the children of Adam. Right. We're even closer. We're the children of Noah, right? We're all descendants of Noah. So we all are part of this family. We're all parts of one, part of Hashem, part of God. And in that sense, he's correct. Viewing it later as he's the Son of God individually and separately from everyone else, this is where I think that there's misinterpretations that come later on after Jesus'
but
time.
But Jesus didn't cause that, because Jesus made it clear that we were all children of God.
That's right.
And that the only, and that we're all one.
Right.
We're all brothers and sisters of God.
Yeah, on that I agree.
He made that clear, but the people missed that. Even the Christians missed
that. That's right.
And then he made it clear that the only reason we don't see that we're sons of God is because we're divided. You're a divided person think that they're the only one, that everybody, you have to accept what they say or nothing and blah, 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 right?
That's right.
But you have to become whole, a whole person, in order to see that we are all the same and we're not, we're all sons and daughters of God, but they don't see it because they live in the misery of their imagination. Mm-hmm. They believe what they think and feel, they think it's real.
Yeah, I agree.
They are divided.
You know,
what a mess, huh?
I mean, I gave the analogy of a body earlier, right? Bodies have different organs, and each organ needs to be different. If the brain thinks it's the heart, thinks it's the hand, thinks it's the eyes, thinks it's the feet, the body's going to be in a mess.
Right.
But unity doesn't mean uniformity. Unity means understanding the differences, but understanding that we're all a part of one.
Yeah.
And if we were all seeing God as oneness that interconnects all of us, then there would be no hatred and separation.
That would be peace on earth.
Right, because if you're hurting, I'm an extension of that. I'm an extension of you. You're an extension of me, and we're all hurting.
Yeah.
So there has to be an evolution in humanity of how, or going back to how we used to. It will.
No, people love their thrills. They love hating. The devil love hating, and he loved being hated.
So let's destroy that.
And if you notice that human beings, anyone that has anger is of their father, the devil, small father, small guy, and they love bringing inflict misery on other people. They roam the earth to see who they can hurt, because they are of the devil. So those people are never going to overcome, because they love evil.
But people can correct, right?
They can.
And that's why we're brought back into this human experience to work on ourselves, to work on our souls, both internally and externally on the world around us. And so,
but you can't help the world around you. They don't want help.
They don't know that they want help.
So let me ask, is it true that Jews are rich?
No, a lot of Jews are not rich, and a lot of Jews may also be rich, like any people.
I've never seen a poor Jew.
Well, come to Israel, I'll show you plenty of poor Jews, and even on this street on Pico, there's some homeless Jews that live on this street.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's a lot of poor Jews out there. There's a lot of rich Jews, too.
I've seen on TV where the Christians will raise money for the poor Jews from Russia and places like that, I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if it was real or not, because it looked like there are no poor Jews.
Well, usually if you're talking about the American experience, the Jews that came here post the Holocaust came here, worked in order to raise money, to create wealth, and they didn't just buy material, they bought properties, they bought things that would have a lot of wealth that would last the generation. We focused on education, on giving our children the potential to be able to have the tools to go and function, to have ideas, and we also help one another, right? I think this is something that when you look at the black community, when a black person is successful, they don't usually always help
other
people.
They run away from the hood.
Right, and so it's not necessarily about a person being Jewish or not Jewish. It has a lot to do with how we practice our culture and how we raise the next generation. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean every single Jew is wealthy or rich, and it doesn't mean every other person of another community isn't rich. You have good people, bad people, rich people, poor people in all communities. The reason why in America there is a high level of success when it comes to the Jewish community is not because of DNA, is not because we're born in any special way. It's because of the culture and how we raise the next generation. Studying, right? We learn Torah, we speak a different language, we ask questions, we challenge, we try to find solutions. So our culture is based on finding solutions to problems.
Is it true that Jews don't sue each other?
No.
They sue everybody else but themselves?
That's not true.
Is it true that Jews are always trying to Jew people down?
What does that mean?
You know, they say the Jews are cheap, right? They are cheap, but when it comes to doing business with other people other than a Jew, they try to Jew each other. Like, if, let's say I hired a Jew crew to do something for my home, put a roof over the house or whatever, right? It's like they're trying to Jew me down and charge me an arm and a leg because I'm non-Jew, but they wouldn't do that to another Jew. Is that true?
Well, for one second, name me a black stereotype.
Black people are very violent.
Violent.
And that's true, though. So, let me give you something that's
Well, let's just use that for a second.
But that's true, though. We can't use that.
But let's just say for a second, would it be comfortable or polite to say to someone, even if it's true, right, to say you're blocking them and expecting people to understand that that means you're being violent and associating the word violent to black? It wouldn't be so nice, even if there's truth to
it. I say it all the time. We do stuff for the black, they don't want to pay.
Right, but when it comes
to that, true?
I think when it comes to the word Jew, we shouldn't associate it to something negative.
Right.
Are some
but
Jews.
But they do it, and I want to clear it up.
Yeah.
Is it true?
What's true?
That they try to get all the money and stuff out of a non-Jew customer.
I can't speak for all Jews.
Have you heard that, though?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Are there situations where a person is a bad person who happens to be Jewish at the same time? Of course, like there is in any other people.
Right.
Do Jews have a culture of trying to be cheap with other non-Jews and not cheap with Jews? That is not true at
all. That's not true at all.
If a person is cheap, he's going to be cheap across the board. Doesn't matter if the person's Jewish
or not.
That's
right. Yeah. When I first heard of Jews, how they treat one another, I wasn't surprised because I know in human nature, all cultures treat each other in different ways, you know. I wasn't surprised by that, but I still love Israel.
Right.
And not the action of the people, but the spiritual relationship with this. But let me ask, so that's not true.
Well, we have a Jewish community, and if someone is in need of help, like let's say there's an accident and unfortunately, God forbid, the parents pass away and the children are in need, the community will come together, find ways to support that child, find them a family, give them money for education.
It used to be that way in the
black. So we help each other in times of crisis and in times of aid, but that doesn't mean if you take an individual who's cheap as a person that he would be differently cheap against one community versus the other.
It used to be that way with the black when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. If something happened, they would help one another until they can get back on their feet.
Hopefully it'll be like that again as a mainstream.
I don't see how, but okay. What's wrong with the blacks?
I mean, you tell me you're black.
What?
You tell me.
But you don't know what's wrong with them? You're Jewish. You're supposed to know.
I'm Jewish.
Remember,
for sure.
You have a brain.
There's a lot of black Jews, too.
Oh, so tell me what's wrong with the blacks. Not all, but most. And then I want to ask you about the black Jews.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the American black experience, right? Because there's black
and
people.
And the South Africa black experience.
Well,
they're a mess over there, too.
It's true, but a different kind of mess. Yeah. Right, but I think you're more so referring to the black American experience. You do have a population that suffered a great deal, and that lost their identity for the most part. Most people of color in the Americas, even in the Caribbeans and in South America, don't know where they come from. What was their tribe? What was their nation? What does it mean to be African American? Africa is a continent. It's not a country. It's not a people. And American is a modern experience, but where are they really coming from? So I think there is a trauma here that was created where identity was stolen and when they've been suffering for many, many generations. And now all of a sudden in our time, we're living in a time where there's equal rights and there are people who are getting out of that suffering and coming back to society. But there are people who are still living as victims, right? And that exists also within the Jewish community. When I talk a lot about empowerment to a lot of Jews who live as victims, they translate that as victim blaming. So maybe when you're giving criticism of your community and you're saying, hey, you shouldn't be victims anymore. You have every potential to be able to succeed. Stand up, work, make the world better, make yourself better. That's, I think, overall your message. Then a lot of people might see that as victim blaming because they're still living in a psychological framework of being victims.
So if that's true, the reason that they act that way about the loss of identity, right? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I see that growing up? Because when I was growing up, black people were very independent people, and they didn't think of, they weren't into the black thing. They were just living. And they knew that there was good and bad in all cultures. And they didn't even want us, if the kids were bad, they didn't want us to hang out with the kids or their parents because they knew that the parents were no good because the kids are what the parents are. They had their own businesses, they did all kind of stuff. And they didn't have a sense of blaming and feeling like they lost their identity. Why didn't they feel that way? I wasn't taught that. Why didn't they feel that way then? Why did they only start feeling that way when the Civil Rights Movement started? Because prior to that, they treated everybody the way they would like to be treated, no matter what color. So why didn't they feel that way when I was growing up, as opposed to now?
Right. So first of all, trauma does pass down generationally, and each generation is different. They say that strong generations create industry, creates peace in the world,
right,
which then a next generation is raised where everything is easy, and they're raised weak. Weak generations eventually end up fighting one another, creates war, and then you kind of have this cycle that happens. So depending on which generation you're born in and at what time period, now they're living in a post-slavery, post-Jim Crow, now we've received civil rights moment where they're now having questions that they might have not had the luxury to ask, and also living with luxuries and not having had to go through such tough times like you probably had to go through, or your parents' generation, or your grandparents' generation, and now it puts them in this different predicament, but they still carry on this generational trauma that yet has to be healed. So I think the focus more should not be on let's point out and say you guys are a worse generation and the previous generation was better, but more so where's the source of where this suffering is coming from? And let's not just react to the symptoms. Let's go to the source in order to correct it. I think that's more the fundamental question.
I think the black got a different kind of problem. Do you realize the worst thing that ever happened to the black was the Civil Rights Movement? Do you see that?
I do. Well, it depends what we mean by the Civil Rights Movement.
You know, the
course.
Martin Luther King trip.
Yeah. But I would say most people...
The worst thing that ever happened to them was that movement, because they were not like that prior to that movement. Mm-hmm.
So I think most people, when they hear Civil Rights Movement, they hear black people have equal rights. So obviously you're not condemning that. What you're condemning is making black people like having the replacement of dad with the government, right? And this whole relationship that is going on and being dependent on the government rather than on their own individual selves and communities. And this period of time that we call Civil Rights Movement is kind of that transition period that created this difference within the culture that then results into the experience. I think that's what you're talking about.
Because we were better off segregated than we are integrated.
You think it's because of integration that there's bad things?
Absolutely.
Well, explain that to me.
Because once they forced the white people to let them into their schools, their neighborhoods, their own private businesses, they forced that, and it built a sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. And the government started giving them free money, saying that, you know, if you don't have a man in the home, we're going to take care of you and your children. And it just forced a sense of entitlement. And then the black politicians and the liberal white politicians and some of the right-on conservatives, they started pretending that they love the blacks. And so they started to say, well, it's racism. We're going to take care of you black people. We're going to do that. It just built a sense of entitlement. It got worse. Even with Martin Luther King Jr., a socialist traitor, even though he was a Republican, the report is that he was a Republican, he joined the Democratic force under Lyndon B. Johnson, and they agreed to give blacks this and that, but they also agreed to let the black people start to be the leader of the blacks. Vote for me, I'm black, I do that. It's just been a sense of entitlement ever since then.
So I'll agree with the second part, and I'll disagree with the first part.
What part
Meaning,
you disagree with?
I'll say that I don't think the negativity came from integration, but more so how integration was done. and you could have had integration in a way that wasn't forceful.
Right.
That wasn't done in
naturally.
That. Yeah.
It was already
so,
happening.
So you're not
that
against
way.
The idea that we integrate. You're against how it was done.
Forced integration.
Okay. So on that, we're fine. I don't think anyone should be forced to integrate, but we should have equality. We should have integration. We should be able to see each other as human beings, as brothers and sisters, as both here in a certain period of time, in a certain land, working together to elevate the human experience, to make life better for one another, to respect law and order. And I think that's regardless of the amount of pigmentation that you have in your skin.
What are civil rights?
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
So I'm not American, but civil rights, from my understanding, having lived a large period of my time here, is the right that human beings who live as U.S. citizens should have, you know, the right to freedom of speech, the right to expression, the right to videotape, the right to bear arms.
But the blacks always said they want...
Well, they didn't have, like, all rights, right? They didn't have the right to vote. You know, you had a certain percentage of the
vote. Women didn't have the right to vote, and we were better off.
You think?
Yeah.
You think women shouldn't have the right to vote?
Absolutely. The worst mistake the country ever made.
I don't know if I'll agree.
Allow
I don't
women
know if
to
I'll
vote.
Agree with you on that one.
What?
I don't know if I can agree with you on that one. I do think women should have a right to vote.
Really? Yeah. Why? Look how they're so crazy.
Well, are they crazy because they have the right to vote?
No, they're crazy because Satan is their god.
Okay. Well, to
is
some, not
true?
To all. Well, say you can. First of all, we have different views of Satan, but going off of your definition, if Satan was the god, it's not just the women. There's some men who also see that person or that entity as their god. So it's not the fact that they're female or male. It's the fact that some people have a wrong perception of morality.
Well, men get the idea that Satan is their god because they got it from their mothers. Mm-hmm. They become like their mothers. If you notice, men act just like women. Any man that has anger is a woman. Mm-hmm. He act like his mother because you become like what you hate, right? Mm-hmm. And mothers... All mothers turn the sons and the daughters away from the fathers because that jealous spirit, the man represents God on earth.
It depends
and
which
so
family.
That jealous
that's, not
spirit,
the, that's not the reality.
That
of my
jealous
church.
Spirit of the mother, she always turned the children away from the fathers. And so the boys and the girl become angry. Mm-hmm. And as a result, becoming angry, which is the nature of the mother, they become like what they hate.
I think you're expressing a truth from your experiences.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it did happen. Yeah. But it happened to every human being on the planet.
It didn't happen to me and to a lot of the people that I know.
That's
my,
why
my
God,
mom is a very strong, God-believing woman.
Oh, Lord.
Who definitely,
those are the worst ones.
Why?
But let me ask you this first, and then I answer that.
Sure.
Whenever a woman says she believes in God, you better run.
So when she says she doesn't believe in God, that's when you shouldn't run?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Amazing.
Amazing. Let me ask this. I want to ask you so much, man, and time is going fast. Quick answers.
Sure.
The black Israelite people, you heard of them, right?
I did.
Are they real Jews or fake?
I'm sorry, this is not going to be a quick answer. you're touching on a topic that's very dense, and I have to break down a few things in order to get there.
Okay.
So I talked to you earlier about there being 12 tribes, and there being 9.5 tribes that are missing as a part of the family of Israel. And what happened is after the time of King Solomon, the 12 tribes split into two kingdoms. You had the northern kingdom of Israel, which was called the kingdom of Israel, with 9.5 tribes. And you had the southern kingdom of Judea, which was Judah, Benjamin, and half of Levi. Today's Jewish population descend from the southern kingdom. But the 9.5 tribes, kingdom of Israel, was displaced by the Assyrians and kicked out to the four corners of the earth. Now they live in Africa, in Asia, in South America. They really spread all over. And part of a project that I've initiated years ago is called We Were Never Lost, which is to find these communities and reintegrate them into Israel. So we've been working on a documentary series on these communities, particularly in Africa. That's our season one. Season two will be in Asia, season three in South America. Now, over the past 5 years, we've been to Nigeria, Uganda, Tanzania, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Madagascar, Ethiopia, and Ivory Coast, finding descendants of these Israelite communities who are still practicing Judaism, doing the Jewish laws, preserve their identity, are
right.
being, by the way, persecuted for being Jews, blamed for running the economy and running the governments and running the societies, the same thing that Jews get blamed everywhere else. Now, what's interesting in the Black Hebrew Israelite experience is if you look at the large percentage of the transatlantic slave trade, a large percentage came from the Igbos in Nigeria, right, in West Africa. About 30% of the trade came from the Igbo population, meaning you had other Black Africans selling particularly the Black African Igbos, which descend from the tribe of God and from the Jewish people, to the white people on the coast and bringing them as slaves into America. So we have a large percentage of the ancestry of the African American experience that descend from Jews that were living in Africa, Israelites that were living in Africa. Now, in the 80s, you had a movement of a lot of black people identifying as Jews, and they went to the Jewish leaders in New York, the Sephardi Jewish rabbis, the Ashkenazi Jewish rabbis, and they said, hey, we believe we descend from your people, let us in. If we gotta convert, we'll convert, you know, find a way, we want to be part of our family. And unfortunately, my community, the Jewish people, the mainstream Jewish family, rejected them. And as a consequence to that, you had a break-off community that said, well, if they're rejecting us, and we know that we are Hebrews, it must mean that they're not Hebrews. And the only people who are willing even to listen to them are the Farrakhans, who come with this replacement theology, yeah. And they're the fake Jews, you're the real Jews, they're the white devils, they finance black slavery, all the nonsense of Farrakhan that we know. Yeah. But that's the only person who's willing to engage them and validate their identity. And so you mix this evil mentality with a seed of truth, and you mix it together, and you create different versions of black Hebrew Israelites, which some of them are not hateful towards Jews, don't have replacement theology. Some of them believe in Jesus, some of them don't believe in Jesus, and some of them are very extreme. And so, in my opinion, the black Israelite phenomenon that's happening is really descendants of Israelites that were taken in the black slave trade who are coming back to their identity and unfortunately are not yet being integrated in the right way. And we can look at Ye, for example, right? Before he went off and started praising Hitler and saying all sorts of bad stuff to the Jews, the first thing he was saying is, I'm a Jew. I am Jew. That's literally what he said over and over and over again. And how did the Jewish community react to that? We kind of said, you're not a Jew, get out of here. What are you saying? What are you? And so his response was, well, you're rejecting me, so I'm going to project rejection onto you. And these are symptoms. If we really want to fix the problem, we have to go to the source. Okay. The source is that there is a truth here, that there are a lot of black people in America who have ancestry that's Israelite, who are coming back to that identity and need to be reintegrated back into the Jewish collective.
Wow. What the... So let me ask, were women created to lead or to follow?
Depends which women.
Women, period.
We have women that were prophets and leaders of the Jewish people. Sarah was a prophet. Deborah was a Jewish leader.
But they had their husband telling them what to do. They weren't doing it on their own.
Not in those particular cases. I do agree that most of the time, you know, women want to be led by a man and a man wants to lead a woman.
So were women created by God to lead or to follow?
Women were taken from the rib of Adam to be an extension of man. They were created closer to the Sabbath. So in Jewish perspective, they're actually holier, which is why Jewish men...
Holier than what?
Holier than men.
Really?
Yeah.
But how can they be holy when it's the woman who took on the identity of the deceiver, the serpent? And so they have the nature of the serpent. How can they be holier than man?
Well, there are also problems with women and problems with men, and you can identify some of those issues.
No, but how can they be holy if Satan is their God?
So if, let's say, we go through creation, right? First you have light and day, then you have plants, then you have animals, then you have human, and you can tell the closer you're created to the Sabbath, the holier you are. Clearly, you're holier than an ant. Right? As humans, we're an elevated species. And women are created closer to the Sabbath.
Because of time. How can a woman be holier than the man if Satan is, because the God above is the man's God, mm-hmm. and the God below, Satan, is the woman's God. And so because she listened to the serpent became her God, and she no longer listened to her husband, who listened to his father, right, obeyed the father. But then when the husband listened to the woman and he started to obey her, he would no longer obey the father. The woman became the man's God. And as a result, every time the man listens to the woman, he suffers. And so how can the woman be holier than the man when Satan is her God? And then if you notice, every time the man listens to the woman, whether it is mama or anybody, he suffers. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that?
Say that again?
Have you noticed that every time the man listens to the woman, he suffers?
No.
Yeah?
Not every time.
Every time?
No. In my opinion, that's not correct.
So,
and also, we don't view God and Satan in the same way from the Jewish perspective to the Christian
Satan
perspective.
Satan is the evil one, and God is the love one.
There's definitely the energy of evilness within Satan.
Right.
It's your Yetzer Ra. It's like a force that is putting you to your evil inclination.
Yes.
But we don't look at it as its like own God, right? There's no like God on the top, God on the bottom. God is oneness.
Right.
And there is this evil inclination because if the world was created
perfect... But that comes through the woman.
No, it comes through. It can come through anyone. There's a lot of evil men, and there's a lot of very holy women.
It's the nature of the mother, though.
I think it's the nature of humanity.
The evil that's in the mother.
Everyone has evil inclinations.
Right, but it's from the mother.
I don't agree.
But let me ask: would you ever listen to a woman?
I would listen to a person if they're telling me the right thing, regardless of their
gender. How about a woman?
Yes, if the woman is...
Would you ever obey a woman?
What do you mean by obey?
Obey.
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 What do you mean by that?
Would you ever obey a woman? Your friend is listening.
Define obey.
Well, you know what obey means. Well, look, sound like them.
Look, I have a lot of respect for my mother. I will have a lot of respect for my future wife.
Would you ever obey a woman?
But define what you mean by obey.
Listen to
or be like forced to do something?
Because of time, would you ever obey a woman?
Would you ever obey a man?
No.
Okay, so
I don't obey anyone.
Okay, so you only obey God.
God.
Okay, so it was a trick question.
No, not. And so would you ever obey a woman?
By your definition of obey, no, I wouldn't obey anybody. I would only obey God.
Oh, man.
Amazing.
That's a cheap way out. What?
Listen.
You took on what I said. How about you? Would you personally obey a woman?
Listen, the reason why I answered in that way is I think when we use words, we might mean different things, which is why I wanted to understand in this conversation what you mean by obey. So I asked you, would you obey a man? And you said no, which means you view the word obey as something that you should only be under God and not be obeying any human being, regardless of men or women.
But I'm asking you about the woman.
So in your definition of obey, no.
Let me ask. Let me ask this really fast because we're so out of time.
That's fine.
The land that Israel is on now, where Israel is located right now, including the land of Palestine where they live and all that, mm-hmm. has that always belonged to Israel, to the Jews?
Yes.
Always belonged to the Jews.
Since the foundation of our civilization, which started with the Hebrews, the descendants of Eber, it was the son, a descendant of Shem, was a descendant of Noah. You had Eber, which is the father of the Hebrews. And Abraham is a Hebrew that eventually creates a family, that family creates the first indigenous civilization to that land. Eventually, the Canaanites take over that region. We come back from Egypt, we take the land back from the Canaanites, revive our ancient civilization, and then that land was taken away. With the first destruction of the temple, we get kicked out to the Persian Empire. Eventually Cyrus, which they believe that Trump is a reincarnation of, allows us to come back to the land of Israel and create the second temple. And then the Assyrians kick out the northern kingdom, and the Romans kicked out our ancestors, the southern kingdom of Judea. And because we were kicked out of a land at that time called Judea, we were named as Judeans. But is it the rightful land of the Jewish people? Absolutely.
Why do the Palestinians believe, and now some Americans believe, that the Jew took the land from the Palestinian people, mm-hmm. just as they believe that America took the land from the Indian? Why do they believe that the Jewish people took the land from the Palestinian or whomever they believe?
Right. So who controlled the land before 1948?
I don't know.
The British. And before the British, the Ottomans. And we can keep going back to the Caliphates and the Ottomans and the Byzantines and the Romans. And so there was never a civilization, country, or kingdom that existed here since Judea that existed 2,000 years ago. Now, Palestinians, what they are mostly descendants of Jews who converted to Christianity and Islam, who left the Jewish line, who were Arabized with time as the entire region was Arabized, who mixed in with other local Arab populations who came, and now have this post-colonial identity of being a collection of individuals who have a real connection to this land. Their ancestors come from here. They belong here. And unfortunately, what the British do everywhere that they colonized is they divide and conquer. That's what they did in India and Pakistan. That's what they did in Nigeria with the Hausa, Fulani, Igbos, and Yoruba. And that's exactly what they did between the Jews and the Palestinians. They convinced the local peoples to fight each other. And in order to fight each other, you have to create this narrative that all the Palestinians want to kill you and kill the Jews, and all the Jews want to kick you out and hate you. And then you force two peoples to be fighting together. And unfortunately, a lot of Palestinians are still raised with this narrative that the reason for why you suffer and have suffered and continue to suffer is because Israel exists. And the way to end that suffering is to destroy Israel. But the reality is that there is no future where Israelis or Palestinians will disappear. So to continue to push a zero-sum game narrative where it's one versus the other is actually the fuel that allows this conflict to continue. And what we need to understand is that we both have a presence in this land, and we need to not just pass down what we've inherited, this bad, because we weren't there during those wars, we didn't make those bad decisions. We need to pass down a different future that unites both populations and allows us to fulfill our aspirations.
Give me a quick answer. Are you happy that Donald Trump is going to turn Gaza into a hotel resort?
No.
You're not happy?
No.
Why not? It's going to look better and feel better.
Because I don't think it's the job of any foreigner, whether good or bad, to touch and mess with the land that belongs to both the Jewish people and the Palestinians.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So I got to put you on the hot seat.
Go for it.
What's the name of that Bible that the white people are mad at the Jews about?
The Talmud?
So, short answer for this, and then I'll have you back to elaborate more. There are some white people believe that Talmud. You know about that, right?
Yes, of course.
They said that whoever wrote the Talmud and the designers believe...
The Jews
believe that Jesus is in hell and that he's... Right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Right? What do you say to that? Because they're listening.
So the Talmud is a compilation of many conversations that happened throughout hundreds and thousands of years. And so you have conversations between this rabbi and this rabbi who debate this topic, between this Jew and this Jew who debate this topic. And then in the end, there's a decision that's made. So if this person is debating and saying something that eventually is not what is accepted, you can't take that out of context and say, hey, it says this in the Talmud. The Talmud is not a book of everything that it says. It's correct. It's a book of conversations.
Oh.
So a person that might not be legitimate presents a case and has a conversation about a negative topic that doesn't make it right. And that's the problem when people are reading the Talmud. They're interpreting it like it's the Torah, like it's the Bible. The Bible, whatever is written, is from God. The Talmud are a series of conversations about different topics. So
Do they know that?
Well, they don't, which is why they're mad. But hopefully with your show and from now on, you can tell people what it's about.
So it's just a book written by people with different opinions.
It's a book of conversations.
Conversations.
Yeah. So if you had a guest here that came and said something negative, you have people here who very much so disagree with you.
Right.
And someone said, well, on Jesse Lee Peterson's show, this person said that, so that means that that's what Jesse Lee Peterson says. That would be ridiculous, right? So you can't look at this book and take a conversation that's being had and someone said something that was wrong, that the Jewish people see as wrong, and then say, oh, well, the Jews believe in this, which is the opposite of the truth.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
So are there Jews who don't like the Jews? They don't like one another?
Sure, of course. Okay. You have that in every community.
Oh, okay. That's amazing. Okay. Because I often wondered, I remember when Israel was giving up land to the Palestinians, and I remember when they gave them the Gaza Strip.
2005, yeah.
Right. They gave up the Gaza Strip, and then they started shouting from the land to the sea.
River to the sea.
From the river to the sea. They only got worse. Why didn't Israel give them any land knowing that they're going to get worse?
Well, that's because you had some people in power that thought that this was a land issue, and if you just give a piece of land, then people would be happy.
Oh.
But it's much bigger than that.
Yeah, it would never land thing.
Well, both the Jews and the Palestinians see from the river to the sea as their home. So any portion...
But they want to push the Jews into the sea.
Some, not all.
Not all Palestinians?
Not all. Not all.
You Definitely met one?
Many.
Oh.
Many, many.
So were you born in Africa?
No, I was born in France. My grandparents were born in North Africa, Algeria and Morocco.
And they were born as Jews?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing, huh?
Amazing.
So listen, I got to put you on the hot seat.
I thought I was on the hot seat.
I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
Let's do it.
The hot seat.
What is a man?
A man is a person that has the chromosomes and the genetics of being a male, and a woman is the same thing for female.
Is America the best country on this side of heaven?
For me, the best country is my own people, the same way you would say that your favorite family is your own family. So I'm for Israel, but I'm appreciative of America.
So is America the best country on this side of heaven?
Which side?
On this side.
Yeah. No, for me, the best country is Israel.
Do the Jews own everything?
No.
Which is worse, abortion or slavery?
They're both negative.
Which is worse, abortion or slavery?
That's like saying, would you want your sister or your brother to be killed? I mean, I don't think you could really choose.
No, that's not the question.
I know.
But which is worse, abortion or slavery?
Jews answer a question with another question. So.
Jews
answer questions with other questions.
Is the earth flat or round?
Round.
Do we need more white babies?
We need more all-colored babies.
No, do we need more white babies?
We need more white babies, black babies, brown babies, all-colored babies. Skin color is a concept that we've divided ourselves by, right? There's no such thing as really white people or black people. We've created those divisions, and now there's a real experience with it. So do we need more babies that have less pigmentation in their skin? Sure, the same way we need more babies with more pigmentation.
So how about white babies? Do we need more white babies?
Yes, let's have more white babies. More babies all around.
Is Israel building a third temple?
Bizlat Hashem soon. Not yet, but it has to do that as soon as possible.
Should we keep Trump in office for another year? I mean, another term.
Another term? That's up to America to decide what's best for its country.
Does a chicken have lips?
Does a chicken have lips? No, it has a beak.
Have you ever told anyone how the cow ate the cabbage?
How the cow ate the cabbage? No, I have not told anybody.
True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
False.
False?
Not always. Could be.
Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
It depends on what context and how.
Do you support abortion?
It depends in what situations.
Is abortion?
Overall, I think we've made this issue something that it's like nothing, and it's definitely something. This is a potential of human life being created here, and to kind of wash it over as it's a cluster of cells and not important is absolutely wrong. However, there are certain circumstances, according to Jewish law, where in the very beginning of a woman's pregnancy, it is okay to have abortions.
Is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
There are times where it could be okay, sure.
Would you ever obey a woman?
By your definition, no.
You don't know my definition.
I do know your definition. We spoke about this.
What's my definition?
Because you said you wouldn't obey a man either. So you use the word obey in terms of something that you shouldn't fall under.
No,
men
but
or
I'm
women.
Talking about you personally.
Right, but I'm answering a question that you're using a word that
way,
might have different definitions.
In the way you see obey, would you ever obey a woman?
Would I listen to my mom if she's asking me to do something that's important for her? Absolutely. Would I listen to my wife if she's asking me to do something that's important to her? Absolutely. Would I use the word obey to describe that situation? Not necessarily.
Amazing. Do you have anger?
I think all of us could have anger at different times, but Baruch Hashem, thank God, I was born in a way that it's very hard for me to get angry.
Do you have anger?
Right now, no.
I mean, do you have it?
No.
Amazing. Did you have fun?
A lot of fun.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you being here.
Tell
the folks about your upcoming documentary or movie, how they can get it, and blah, blah, blah.
Whatever else
you want to promote.
Thank you. So we're doing a documentary series on the quote-unquote lost tribes of Israel. Each season is focused on a different region in the world. Season one is in Africa. And so we have 6 different episodes across 8 different countries about the tribes of Israel coming back to the consciousness of our time. We explore their stories, struggles, and aspirations, what they've been through. Beautiful travel documentary. It should be ready within the next 6 months, and it will be out on a very mainstream platform. I can't yet release and say where it's going to be, but if you look up We Were Never Lost, you'll be able to find it on social media, and you'll be able to find it online.
Amazing. Do you love white people?
I love all people, including white people, yes.
Do you love white people?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Again, thanks for taking on the high seat and being here.
Of course.
And thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget to like, follow, ring the bell. What else? If there are other interesting guests you like, or anyone you'd like to see on the show, let us know. Contact my producer. Producer at thefallestate.tv. Check out Punchy's Coffee and out of all of them, merch and stuff like that. Am I leaving anything out? What? Oh, I do cameos. Birthday shout-outs, wedding shout-outs, anniversary shout-out, whatever shout-out, go to Cameo, cameo.com/Jesse Lee Peterson. Let us hear from you. I do appreciate it. Thank you, man. That was amazing.
It was amazing.
All right. Amazing.